he was in amazing form. Today he dealt with a lot of exciting topics, and I'm sure some of them were rather, he offered some rather, on the surface, surprising psukim, but if you understand Rav Asher Weiss, so you'll see very clearly there's nothing surprising with him, because everything he says makes sense. I was very inspired. One of the people, what they did today was one of the sessions was on end-of-life issues. He's been spending a lot of time talking about end-of-life issues on this particular trip. And so with the rabbis, we were blessed to have not only Rav Asher, but one of the preeminent pediatric oncologists who moderated the session. And as she, which was fascinating in and of itself, but as she was you know, beginning her session, so she mentioned that one of the beautiful things about Rav Asher is the fact that when you watch him take apart a shayla, so you're not only getting the psak, you're also getting the avira of the psak. You get the feeling of the psak. So it was a very, very exciting day. I think she was spot on with the comment, and I think it's a you know, I think in the next couple of weeks we'll probably hear some of those exciting piskei halacha. So it was just some very exciting stuff, some very fascinating things. But it's Thursday night, and we are about to deal with Kabbalah Satorah. So Rav Asher also highlighted the importance of understanding Kabbalah Satorah is not only a it's not only the fact that we got it. We're told on a number of occasions that we have to remember that one of the six zechiros that a person has a responsibility to remember is also the Yom Asher Amadat Lefnei Hashem Elokech HaBachori. You have a responsibility to remember the day. So, you know, our questions tonight will be focused primarily in the halachic realm, but, you know, you have to remember, you got to focus. There's a whole environment that comes along with it. So, let's get started. I'll be in a hotel for Shabbos next weekend. That's the writing. I was told that there was to be no candle lighting in the rooms, but not to worry, because there will be ability to light candles outside of the common dining room. Is that okay? Can I light there? Should I light there? What other options do I have? That's the first question. And the alternative question, because tonight we're only going to do two. I'm only going to put two on the table. I'll do more in the future. We have become aware of the need to place certain boundaries within our relationships between our children and their cell phones. I even applaud the schools that are taking steps to help our kids concentrate. However, one of the schools has just enacted a policy of, quote, taking it away, wherein the teacher or administration reserves the right to confiscate any cell phone found in school. Is that theft, or is it mutter? Gotta love it when the questions are formulated in that straight-up style. Is it theft, or is it mutter? So we've got the Rebbe stealing the cell phone, and we have the candle lighting in the hotels. Candle lighting cell phones. Okay, so you like them both? So let's start with the second one first. We'll see how we do. And then we'll decide how far into the first. The first one's a much bigger shaila, because it's asked in a much wider space. So let's start with the second one, right? I'm aware of the boundaries and relations, because school enacted a policy of taking it away, wherein the teacher administration reserves the right to confiscate any cell phone found in school. Is that theft, or is it mutter? Thoughts? Or I have to look at, even. You don't have to give me the right answer, the wrong answer. What do I have to look at?
Like the rules to follow in the school.
So the school of right to enact its own rules, and if you break it, too bad on you.
Is it permanently caveat.
Permanently taken away? Okay, what difference does it make? Go ahead. If it's permanently taken away,
then it could be Geneva.
Yeah, could be, or it is?
No, it is.
That's what you guys are arguing. Okay, why is it Geneva? I warned them. I told them. You know, if you bring your cell phone and you use your cell phone, so it's a...
What if you said if you use your cell phone...
Or your baseball bat.
I will murder you.
Right?
It's in the rules. If you bring your cell phone, it's the death penalty. It's in the rules. Being in the rules doesn't make it right.
Okay. Any other considerations that would make a school different from everything else?
When you sign a contract of behavior or conduct,
right,
you're signing up to whatever the rules are. If you don't like them, don't show up.
Right. What about that? Yeah, back at you.
Because the contract is a contract, and theft is an isser d'oraisa.
Right.
So you can't be docha an isser d'oraisa with a contract.
Really? If I agree, then aren't I really saying that I don't consider it theft in that way?
Well, if you agree to the policy.
If I sign a policy at the beginning of the school year, or if there's an understood policy at the beginning of the school year that I will adhere to all the policies, including the cell phone policy, right? And my parents countersign it because that's the way our schools operate now. They don't trust the kids. Especially high school, even though they're over the age of bar mitzvah. One of the ha'aros that Rav Asher made today, there was a question about someone had raised about whether a child over the age of das, in other words, a child in Torah Judaism, a child hits das at what age? 12 or 13, depending on whether the person is an adult or a child. In legal law, when does a person become a bar das? 18, right? 18. So legal law, right? 18. So the question had become, can a person decide, let's say a 13, 14, 15, 16-year-old calls up and he says, I want to donate my kidney. Are you allowed to go ahead and accept that kidney in such a situation?
Not without
parents. Okay. The parents want to say they'll sign anything. Yeah. Are you allowed? Al pi halacha. Are you allowed to even agree to such a thing? So Rav Asher had suggested that you have to understand something. He said to us, and in his humble opinion, this was his words, he thought that the answer is clearly not. He says, thank God we have Dina de Malchus Adina here. Why is that? Yes, I know. That's the rule in your house also, right? So he said, I have Makor that I'm right. So we have a Gemara. The Gemara tells us that when it comes to the decisions on real estate, we don't trust a bar mitzvah boy. Real estate decisions are made at what age? 20. So Rav Asher says, I think giving a kidney is at the same level, requires the same level of das, at least, as a situation of a real estate deal. And if for a real estate deal, because they're more chamor, need das of a 20-year-old, so too the donation of the kidney. So let's assume for a moment, the kid is not old enough if he's really stupid, he's in high school, he's still in high school at 20, right? In which case you have another problem, the kid's probably a shota. But that, let's not go there for a minute, right? Let's assume that, he's a regular teenager, 14, 15, 16, 17, or she, so if she, it's a cell phone, so it could be either way, right? So she's 14, 15, so you're right, maybe the cell phone policy doesn't affect her. Moreover, who's the one who owns the phone? I tell that to my kids all the time, right? You want to put social media on? It's not your phone, it's my phone. You don't have the right to go ahead and add things to my phone. We'll discuss whether that's accurate, maybe in a different year. But one thing for sure, I think that our Shiloh only begins if Moshe's point about this signing of the policy not only includes the child. The child's like a small piece. The bigger issue is the parents. But let's say we agree. Doesn't that alleviate the theft factor? I agree.
There are other issues, though. I mean, it's a little complicated, but you have, let's say, the issue of ribbis or Misachim Bukovia, right? The problem is...
There's no ribbis there.
I'm saying, but the concept of ribbis, right? Even though somebody agrees to pay the interest, you're still not allowed to charge it to him. And same thing with gambling, right? Even though somebody agrees that if they lose, they're going to give you their money.
So you want to argue asmachta? Yeah, but if that's the case, you don't get to get something back simply because you decided that you were going to keep the rules. I was listening to somebody else describe the other day. He was talking about mekach tos and marriages, right? So let's say a person decides, she didn't realize at the time she got married that she was going to grow up and not like him anymore, right? Does that mean she can argue mekach tos on the marriage? No, that's ridiculous. You get married, you can't argue. Where Moshe Feinstein would not have argued mekach tos in that situation. At the time you got married, you get what you get. I think at the same time over here, at the time I signed the deal, it's not a smachta, it's not dependent on a condition. It's made very clear, don't use your cell phone, use it, and lose it. So I don't think it's a problem of Geneva in that situation, necessarily.
What about the fact that there are other things that a school could confiscate without even needing a contract in place?
Namely?
I don't know, drugs, not kosher food. I don't know, if they saw anything that didn't belong in the school, they don't need a contract. The school has every right to say, there's a Big Mac in school, we're taking it away.
Who says that you have a right to do that? Let's say, I don't know, let's say I had a yeshiva, And let's say the yeshiva rents space in, I don't know, a shul, right? And let's say the boys in the yeshiva have, I don't know, a oral fixation. And they deal with their oral fixation by making sure that it's a warm oral fixation. So they put a cylindrical device in their mouths and light the other end in order to warm themselves up. And let's say, I don't know, this is a violation of policy that the shul arranges with the kids. And now let's say they also have a policy that you cannot keep cartons of these cylindrical items on the premises. You want to say the shul has a right to go ahead, take all those cartons and those packs and get rid of them?
That may be a little different because that may be a landlord tenant. But I'm saying with the yeshiva itself, let's say it's yeshiva and the dorm counselor or the yeshiva walks in and finds something that blatantly is not allowed to be in yeshiva, even without a contract prior.
It's a murderous device. You're killing yourself with every puff.
Right? Well, I'm saying, but there's obviously instances where there's no contracts in place and it's known yeshivas take things away.
And I'm asking you that maybe all those... I'm asking you that perhaps in every single one of those instances, it's usher. Maybe you assume that there's a difference between that and the cell phone. Maybe yes. Why are they allowed to take those things? Yodi, why...
You're not stealing it. You're putting
it aside.
You're
using it?
If you don't return it, you're stealing it.
But who said... When the guy graduates, you'll when he leaves, you can return him his stale cigarettes.
Okay. So do I have to? Right? Do I have to? Maybe I should convince him at that point. Maybe I should only give him back the money, the shavik kesef, right? Because it's a takanas hashavim, just not the shavim of the same type. Okay. So let's backtrack. Now that you understand some of the major... This was not such a simple shaila. You have to start taking it backwards, try to figure things out. To me, if I'm not mistaken, there are two primary reasons that a teacher takes something away from students, I hope. Reason number one, legitimate. Primary reason. Reason number one, the Rebbe is jealous of the kid. He wants to play the Game Boy, right? And I just dated myself because I don't think we talk about Game Boys. Now we're talking about Nintendo Switches, right? Right. So the first reason is to prevent the student from using the item to disrupt his own learning, right? Why am I taking away your cell phone? Because it's distracting you, right? So if I take it away from you, now you will be able to learn. That's the theory. So the teacher or the Rebbe decides to take it away so that this way you'll be able to learn. That's reason number one. Reason number two, right? Or that you know, it's causing other kids not to be able to learn, distracting others, which is, I'll call that one and of the same for the sake of the conversation. And lesson number two is, I'm going to teach you a lesson, right? Why do we announce that we have a cell phone policy? So that you should understand, I'm teaching you a lesson. Rabbi Newman was telling me that the cell phone policy in RTMA was actually embraced by all the guys. He was like blown away by it. How amazed he was that the guys were actually like chalishing for it. He was bracing for the worst, and the kid's now just like, no problem, here, Rabbi. Or one kid came in, and we were talking, and one kid goes, Rabbi, I forgot to put it in. And he walks in the door. Rabbi Newman looks at me, looks at his mom, and goes, we haven't even started Seder this year. It's not like the kid had like gotten busted. It's understood. So, he just wanted me to know that the kids understand it. Lesson number two is to teach the kids a lesson. What's the lesson? Don't you try with us. Are either of these an issue? So, let's say I steal something to prevent somebody else from violating a prohibition. Like, let's go back to the cigarette example, right? Let's say I see somebody, they're going to violate the prohibition, right? Not to mention a whole bunch of other ones. And I steal their stuff from them. Can I think of any biblical precedent? Huh? So the most obvious biblical precedent that we have is Rachel Imenu also stole cigarettes. Whose cigarettes did she steal? She stole Laban's truffin, right? Why was she allowed to go ahead and do that? You ever wonder? No? Huh? Before Matan Torah.
Before Matan Torah. It didn't work out so well.
Okay, so first of all, you should just know the Avnei Nezer in Yoredeus Simin Kuchaf Aleph comes along and says she did it because she wanted to stop him from serving Avodah Zarah. Objectively, right, Lavan would have benefited more from losing the Trafim than from having the Trafim. Because you have the Trafim, you chai misa, right? You don't have the Trafim, you live. So if I took the trophim, what I was doing was actually a benefit for you in such a situation. That's the Avnei Nezer's argument. The Meshech Chachma in Bereishis Lamed Aleph Lamed disagrees, and he says exactly what the what Yossi said, which is,
didn't work out.
In other words,
she died.
She what she did
was wrong.
Right? This is Meshech Chachma. Meshech Chachma carries a lot of weight in this building. Right? Because
it was only because of Yaakov's declaration.
Not so pashut. Right? Even though Chazal say that Rachel died because of Yaakov's curse. Right? So the Meshech Chachma says, even though that's what we're told, but the truth is, on a simple situation, on the simple level of interpretation, she was a Bas Noach. A Ben Noach or a Bas Noach who violates one of the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nai Noach gets Misa. That's the Meshech Chachma. Huh? No, I'm not going there because the question is on Rachel Imenu, right?
No, I'm saying, even if you say that, a Ben Noach is not high in Misa for being a widow.
Really?
True.
That's the last time I checked. It's also in the top seven.
What was she over? Seven.
Stealing.
But that stealing is people. It's kidnapping.
Stealing? No, stealing is stealing. In the Ben Noach situation, it's a serious violation. Stealing in the Aseres HaDibros is kidnapping, right? And Aseres HaDibros, Lo Signov is not a reference to stealing money. That appears in next week's parashah when we say lo tignovu. There's a big difference, huh? So the chida, no, only Eretz Yisrael. They may have kept all 613, but they were obligated to keep Sheva Mitzvahs B'nei Noach wherever they were in the world, right? That's a big answer to the question of how Yaakov Avinu was allowed to marry two wives. So the chida in Pesach Einayim in Bava Kama Perek Tes says, although Rachel Imenu intended to prevent Yaakov Avinu from being Obed Avodah Zarah, right? I'm sorry, Rachel Imenu intended to prevent her father Lavan from being Obed Avodah Zarah. The method wasn't the proper method, but why? Because when she stole the trophim, guess what happened? Did it stop him? No, he chased after, right? And he was ready to kill out the whole family over the loss of this trophim, right? So I guess it didn't work out too well for her intentions, and it wasn't going to bring him to go do tshuva. So next time you think, if I steal somebody's cigarettes, right? Do you think now all of a sudden, oh, right? I have a friend whose uncle is a very, very famous Talmud Chacham, Yerushalayim Yir HaKodesh. So many years ago, when we were in Eretz Yisrael for Shabbos, we spent the Shabbos with him. And every time a car went by, he ran into the street and he screamed, "Stop! Get out of the car! The car is Shabbos!" So I asked him, I said to him, "What are you doing? You're going to get hit by a car." So he looks at me and he goes, "Yeah, but maybe the guy will stop and they'll go, 'Oi, it's Shabbos!' And he'll leave his car there and he'll keep Shabbos. And look how wonderful the opportunity will be for us." It was the last time I went to him for Shabbos, right? So I was like, I told my friend, like, you know, with all due respect, your uncle's crazy, right? And he couldn't get hit by a car one day, the kachaba, but not on Shabbos. But which shows you, right? Even I'm alright. Like, be very careful, right? So we see Rachel Imenu. We mentioned Avni Nezer, who said she was allowed to do what she was allowed to do to hold him back from doing a bigger Avera. But the Meshech Chachma and the Chida both are not too excited about this. What does this do for us in the classroom setting? So if a particular item is causing a disruption, and taking it away will put an end to the disruption, right? Why? Because the kid will get it, and he knows the next day don't bring something like that to cause disruption. So it sounds like the Avni Nezer would say, take it away, right? Take it away, no problem. What about stealing to take to teach a lesson? I call it stealing. Taking it away. Taking the cell phone away. So you'll learn your lesson. You get it, and you'll never get it back. Right? So the Gemara says, if a teacher needs to physically discipline the child, he should make sure to only use a shoelace. Right? Be very careful before you go after big stuff. Right? If that doesn't work, then you should switch the child's seat, and maybe that will influence him positively. I have a relative who lives in Cleveland, Ohio, and every time I visit Cleveland, Ohio, if he drives with me, we drive down a small street, and he starts to shake every time we pass the same spot. I said, "What's the matter?" He says, "You see that chair out there? It's like an old first grade rickety wood chair, and it's like outside of a classroom, but behind a chain link fence." I said, "Yeah." He says, "That's the tshuva chair." I said, "What?" He's a guy in his 30s. So, what's the tshuva here? Oh, I spent many days in the tshuva chair. That is the tshuva chair. I have nightmares about the tshuva chair. When the Rebbe kicked you out of class, he made you sit outside in the tshuva chair, rain or shine, right? And he said, you know, it has its effect, right? So I don't think when we're talking about the Rebbe switching your seat, or the Mora switching your seat, I don't think we're talking about to the tshuva chair to you sit in the snow, right? Huh?
Switching your seat can be something else also, but they don't allow that in schools anymore.
Right. Well, so while we're discussing the aforementioned corporal punishment, it's worthwhile to mention the Ritva says if you're going to hit the child and you're going to make the child be resentful rather than more disciplined, you better realize that that's not a good idea. Right? Even if the child is younger than Bar Mitzvah, you better think twice. In today's situation, I would say not only is it not recommended, it's usher. You know why it's usher? Because you're going to get a jail, right? Don't hit children. Shulchan Aruch puts this idea straightforward when he says that you should never discipline a child with a harsh corporal punishment. Use a shoelace. So the Shalos Teshuvos Kiryas Chana Siman Chaf Beis writes that if the teacher hits harder than you're allowed and he causes an injury to the child, the teacher has to pay for it. And the Aruch HaShulchan in Choshen Mishpat Siman Taf Chaf Dalad Yud Zayin says, it's not so clear that the Rebbe would be chayev to pay, you know, but he says a dayan has to really look at a case very carefully to determine whether the Rebbe went too far. So, you know, it's not just carte blanche. Being a Rebbe is not a carte blanche. I had to go ahead and do that which you feel you have to do. You know, they went ahead and they figured out there was a rabbi in a little town called Tzitzavan, right, who had like a really unique shita in chinuch. That, you know, when he came into town, he never picked up the strap that was hanging on the hook. And nobody can understand, who's this crazy guy? I'd like to point out, and all of a sudden the kids were learning, and they weren't going nuts. And that little Malamed, that Rebbe, that grew up to be a pretty special person. You ever hear the name of Yaakov Kamenetsky? Right? He refused. He felt that the corporal punishment was not something that was going to work. And his kids, surprise of surprises, all wound up in chinuch and did pretty good jobs and lived lives that are pretty good for themselves. So, it's not a carte blanche permission to violate halacha. It's a limited permission to do that which is necessary to discipline the child. So there's a wonderful series of books that came out a couple of years ago from Rav Tzvi Spitz, who's a dayan. The name of the volume is called Mishpatei HaTorah. This is in Chelek Aleph on page 281. He says if you confiscate property from a child, you should better be sure that that is the last resort after trying to calmly discipline the child. If you do resort to taking it away, it is not a heter to taking it away permanently. You might want to take it away till the end of the day. You might want to take it away till the end of the week. But if you take it away permanently, Diane Spitz says, there's something wrong with you. In 1969, a little boy was of 12 years old was punished. He was a little boy in yeshiva in Tel Aviv. And he was told, you can't come back to class until you pay the fine. What was the cost of the fine? A lira. And so the little boy comes home and he tells his father, who was a rabbi. I'll tell you who the father was and who the little boy was in a second. He says, I can't go to school tomorrow. He says, so the father gets all excited and says, why can't you go to school tomorrow? He says, I'm being accused by the Rebbe of doing something that I'm telling you I didn't do. So he says, okay. So he says, so you tell the Rebbe you didn't do it, and you apologize. So the kid says, no, the Rebbe says I have to bring a lira, which to an adult may not be anything serious, but to a kid is a pretty serious amount of cash. And so the Rebbe writes the following thing. The Rebbe says, B'ni ha-Talmud David, Masali, he says, I want you to know my child David has sent the following note to me, Ki chiyavtem oso knas lira achat. You sent along a knas, a fine of a lira, b'shehuzhar, and that you warned him shem lo yavi es haknas lo yurshal ikanes hayom lekita. If he doesn't pay off the knas, the fine, you're not letting him into class. He says hineni sholeach lachem es halira. Here's the lira, right? I'm sending it to you. L'marot, you should just know shelo kibalti shum hoda b'ktav. You didn't send me a note home, right? And ulam be'enayi paleh al smach eze yisod b'halacha chiyavta moso pas. I'm racking my brains. What right do you have to go ahead and send the miknas?
Chizda
quotes the he quotes a Gemara, you have a right to go ahead and collect kenosos. We're learning Sanhedrin in the Shabbos this afternoon, Blatcher. We know that you have to have a Beis Din in order to charge kenosos, and Halacha is pretty clear. We're a little bit careful before we start applying kenosos. By the way, v'ha'im haya birur yisodi shahaya Hashem v'aveira kolshi. You convened a Beis Din? Did you convene a Beis Din to make sure? Let's say you can go ahead and give him a kenas, but that's only assuming that you had a court case. Did you have a court case? How many dayanim sat on that court case? In Jewish law, we don't go on the basis of one dayan. How many dayanim? Three. You got to have a minimum of three. You didn't do that. And by the way, he says, so writes the father, whose name I haven't given you yet, although it's maybe slowly becoming apparent to you, right? The divrei b'ni ain't a lavashma b'mashasa. My son says, I didn't do anything. V'shechaverav hanochachem sham yuchlu lahayir al kach. My friends, if you bothered to investigate, would have come along and said, oh, my son Davidol, he had nothing to do with it. So Alko Panim, this is still, Eineni yodea im zohi derech Yeshua, Yeshara v'chinuchit la'ayim al tamid, shelo yursha likanis l'kita, im lo yavi kenas. I also don't think, like honestly, you go over to a kid, and you tell him, well, you can't go to class until you bring a lira. If I'm the kid, you know what I'm doing? Football, right? Like, you know? So he says, I don't know what you were trying to achieve with your kenas. Here's the lira. I want my kid to go to class. Tell me, what are you using the lira for? So pretty serious questions. You agree with the parents, this particular parent's approach?
Absolutely. It's Rabbi Lau, isn't it?
Close. But no. 1969. Rabbi Lau was... it was close.
Shall be 55 now, 56.
Huh? This is assuming that this letter was written now. It's a little bit older. This is a slightly older letter.
There's a son, David.
Huh? There is another person who has a son.
69.
He's 12.
He's 5 years old.
Oh, 5 years old. Oh,
no, I see. He was 12.
Oh, okay.
Okay. So before Rabbi Lau was chief rabbi of Tel Aviv. There was another individual who was chief rabbi of Tel Aviv. He later grew up to be chief rabbi of the state of Israel, probably closer to the Rishon LeZion. And Hakosei Bitzar Ovadia Yosef, by the way, parenthetically, he signs the letter, Harav HaRashiv Roshav, based in Tel Aviv Yafo. Like, you know, if you just want to know, like, it's a based in matter, so, you know, here's your lira. By the way, who decides these matters in Tel Aviv Yafo? Like, right? So again, it's pretty clear that Rav Ovadia's position on handing out knasot or taking things away, you know, just willy nilly without a yashus, without an investigation, he thinks that that's not a very smart thing for one to do. And certainly Rabbi Spitz is telling us, you can't just go ahead and make that decision. I'm going to take it away forever and ever and ever and ever. It's even more so when the person you're taking it away from, signed or not, by the way, signed or not, is not necessarily the person you're teaching the lesson to. That's why I like our school's policy better. Do you know, both our schools, I think, I assume it's all three, but I don't even know about the younger one. But our boys' school and our girls' school has a policy. You know what it is? Never noticed? Or do we just blindly sign, right? If the kids use the cell phone, right, first thing that happens is it's taken away till the end of the day, right? Which is, it's there. You have a distraction. We don't want you to have a distraction. And what happens if you fail and you do it again? So the parents find out about it. At some point, the parents have to pick it up. And then thereafter, it just gets told that to the parents, do not bring it to school. And after that, it's all on the parents. The parents will all have to go pick it up, which becomes annoying after a while for the parents. Ostensibly, the parents will stop doing this, especially if the kids are coming from, like, Yehupetz land. Can you imagine what would happen? You know, we have a number of boarders here. So one girl gets busted 4 times, right? And she's a boarder. Now her parents have to fly in from England in order to be able to come ahead, pick up the cell phone. You know, I can see it now. The mom comes in and she goes, listen, if you're going to violate the policy, can you do it in the next 2 days? Because once I go back, I don't want to have to get on a plane, come back again, to come pick it up. And joking aside, though, this is, our school's policies is very solid. It's the idea that I'm going to give it back to the place where it belongs, but you need to do what you need to do in order for you to be able to learn. So as far as the Geneva is concerned, that is the position herein. Okay, so we covered topic number 2. I think it's already been a half an hour. I think we're going to stop here. We'll save that Shabbos Shaila for another time, but Be'ezus Hashem, we'll get to it. Maybe we even add it into the hopper for next week. Okay, thank you. Good job.